Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. This is Melissa Biliardi, your host. And today, our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 or 877-497-4103. That is our toll-free. Press 1 will cue you into the show. And thank you, 91,000 listeners, for tuning in to Help for HD Radio. And without you, we could not bring credible and vital information to our community through Help for HD Radio. We love you. And today, our incredible special guest is Patricia Ortiz. She is Vice President of Patient Liaison at Rare Diseases Patients First. And this is a new nonprofit organization that focuses on educating patients with rare diseases about the clinical trial and drug development process. And Patricia began her professional career working at the National Metrology Institute in Germany and has expertise in many different engineering disciplines, including precision engineering, nuclear physics, and quantum optics. Wow. Later, she shifted her focus to biomedical engineering. And upon completing her master's degree in biomedical engineering at the University of Applied Science in Lübeck, Germany, she has also worked for large medical device and biotech companies as well as startups. Companies she's worked for include CareFusion, Life Technologies, Digirad, I don't know if I said that right, and small companies she's worked for as well include 4D neuroimaging and biomagnetic technologies. Oh, wow. What a background. And welcome to our show, Patricia. And how are you this afternoon? You have an amazing background.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here at the show. I'm doing really well. Thank you so much.
And you are actually at NIH right now, right?
Yes, I am. I'm at the National Institute of Health to participate in my own study that studies actually the lung disease I was diagnosed with.
Gosh. So let's talk about that. Tell us why you joined Rare Diseases Patients First and how that came about.
So just in summary, in early 2012, I was diagnosed with a rare lung disease called lymphangeal leiomyomatosis, or short name is LAM. LAM is a progressive lung disease that typically strikes women in their childbearing years. With LAM, abnormal muscle-like cells grow out of control in certain organs and tissues, in particularly the lungs, lymph nodes, and kidneys. So over time, the cells destroy lung tissue, and many women with LAM suffer from worsening shortness of breath, reoccurring lung collapses, and most important to know is that there's no cure for LAM. So LAM may require lung transplantation, and it may also lead to respiratory failure in the end. And so with being diagnosed with that, first of all, it took like years of suffering, and it was very hard for me personally to understand why there are no effective treatments for my disease. As I educated myself utilizing information provided by rare disease organizations, I quickly learned that I'm not alone, and many patients with rare diseases have not received proper diagnosis as to the cause of their suffering, or they endured a great deal of discomfort before they were diagnosed. So, and then to make matters worse, the number of treatments for rare diseases is very limited, and I found it really particularly hard to find unbiased education about rare disease clinical trials and drug development to patients with rare diseases in general. So last year, I met Dr. Lorna Spade and learned of her organization, which is the Rare Diseases Patients First, that focused on filling exactly that gap. And I was so excited about this opportunity to become part of that team and help, you know, serve patients like other, you know, rare disease patients, so in the hope that they don't have to go through what I went through. So that was the personal motivator for me.
Well, this was really a life changer and a career buster for you because you were so active. And how did you cope with all that? How did you morph into what you're doing now? Because that did take away a lot of your career and your life path.
Right. Well, it was a long process, though. So when I go back to, I mentioned that it took years to get diagnosed. So my journey really started when I look back at all my symptoms that I had almost 10 years ago, and which started in a very different way. It started with abdominal problems and unexplainable weight loss, and I had diagnosed some abdominal masses of lymphatic tissue, and I had problems with that. It was closely monitored. They shrank over time, and I just forgot about it. And like a few years later, I started getting really, I was always an athlete my entire life, but I picked up that side and really started to join a women's cycling team, and that was back in 2010. And 2009, actually, and I was very active. I worked very hard throughout the years. I was able to upgrade, and in 2011, I won the California Nevada State Championships in road and criterium racing. So, and that's really my dream came true that year. After all this hard work, I got recruited to race for a fully sponsored elite women's team in Southern California, and that's when things unraveled with my lung disease, because I was challenging myself at a higher level, and B, you know, that's when the symptoms, the lung symptoms appeared. And I had chest pains, I had unexplainable shortness of breath, I also was breathing harder than everyone else. I was equally successful, however, it was very, very hard for me. And then all of a sudden in 2012, everything came to a sudden stop when I was diagnosed with LAM. I had no idea. I was diagnosed with a huge lung collapse right before the end of the year, and instead of being on another training ride the next day, I found myself in a hospital with a lung collapse and a lung biopsy that revealed that I had LAM. And so that's when really the whole journey started. So it's basically one day you're the athlete reaching for the next level, and the next day you're the entire rug is pulled underneath your feet, and you wonder what happened and how you got there. And basically, I had to really shift, you know, and focus on other things that I'm doing. I went through all these stages that you know, some people may go through. I was first in entire denial. I was basically saying, okay, I have this disease. I'm still going to continue to do what I do. I don't care. Then I went into the phase of anger. I was really angry, and why me, and why does this happen?
Yeah.
And, you know, and with that year was very hard. Before I was very healthy, and all of a sudden, I knew nothing else but going to doctor's offices. I had 10 visits to the ER and urgent care. I had to place an emergency call because I was in a severe respiratory distress, and lung collapses on and on and on, and then my lung function started to decline. So now I needed supplemental oxygen to travel. So it's really the world of possibilities and opportunities for me became smaller and smaller. And with that, I had to really look at something else. So it's really when the LAM Foundation, which is the rare disease organization that helps patients with LAM, reached out to me and invited me to their annual conference, that's when things changed for me. All of a sudden, there was this, you know, you're in a dark room, you have limited information. Once in a while, you get this puzzle piece thrown at you, and you try to put this picture together. But all of a sudden, this door opened, and there was this wealth of information given to me. And it was of such high value. I was not only able to listen to all the different scientists and get all this information to learn more about my disease, but I really got the first time the understanding I was not alone. I was not alone. There are so many women that share my struggles on very different levels. I was able to just talk to someone about their experience, share mine. We got to laugh together. We got to cry together. And it was just really wonderful opportunity. And I think that was the moment when I said, you know, this is no longer the same me as I was last year. I have to look at something different. I have to close this door, and I have to find other doors and open those. And so that's basically, I think, the shift in attitude from, you know, the denial, anger, going through curiosity, what's out there. And I think looking at, you know, opportunities out there, it was really one specific Lam patient that really helped me greatly to get back on my feet. She has a very advanced case of Lam and has already received a double lung transplant and is actually listed again for a second one because the disease returned.
Wow.
And but she showcases remarkable braveness and spirit. So one of the first things she taught me was how to fit an oxygen tank into a backpack and use it on my bike. And how I calculate the length of the oxygen line so I can pursue rock climbing if I ever wanted to try that. So, you know, she came up with all these incredible ways to overcome obstacles in any way you would think, and taught me that I can, still make a difference in other people's life if I only recognize new opportunities and look forward instead of backward. And so that's where, you know, the shift started really for me to reach out, become active, to, to start helping, support charity bike rides and start to fundraise. And really, in the coming month, I was busier than ever before. You know, contrary to my fears.
That happens.
No, you know, it's really, I'm very busy, and I'm organizing a lot of fundraisers. Fully engaged, with Dr. Speed, Rare Disease Organization, to really drive that forward, reach out to others, educate. And it's incredible.
It's empowering, isn't it, to be able
it
to
is.
Do that. Well, so where did you meet Dr. Speed? Did you meet her at a conference?
No. I was introduced to her through a very dear friend of mine who works at the same medical device company I work at. So
uh-huh.
I met her, outside of work and got to talk to her. And really was amazed at what she was building up and the new nonprofit organization that she was forming. So, and there I learned that she's a UK registered pharmacist. She has worked in the pharmaceutical industry since the late 80s. She's a true expert in the area of regulatory affairs and drug development and has a really special interest in developing effective treatments for rare and neglected diseases. So Lorna is the founder and president of Rare Diseases Patients First.
Yeah, she's also written a book, Clinical Trials, What Patients and Healthy Volunteers Need to Know, which we've had Dr. Lorna Speed on the show, and that was published by Oxford University Press in 2010. And can they get that book through you, or do they go to the other website? What was the other website? Do you know?
They have, I would go directly to her
uh-huh.
for the information on the book.
No. Oh,
and
okay.
I can provide the email address as well.
Okay. And the email address for Dr. Speed is?
Dr. Speed, yes. Uh-huh. So the email address I have for her is lspeid@snd.com.
Let's see, SNDTM. I'm putting it in the chat room for you.
Yeah. But it's Sierra November Delta Tango Mike.com.
DTM.com. And that is, the book is titled Clinical Trials.
Clinical Trials. Mm-hmm. What Patients and Healthy Volunteers Need to Know.
I should know that by heart. I'm typing that in right now.
mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about the webinars that you guys are doing.
Yeah. So the goal of Rare Diseases Patients First is to provide useful information to patients with rare diseases and parents of children with rare diseases. So, for example, as I mentioned, from my personal experience, one of the most critical areas for patients with rare diseases is getting an accurate diagnosis. And our last webinar that was held at the end of February was dedicated to exactly that topic. It was titled, Why Did It Take So Long for Me, My Child, My Aunt, My Uncle to Be Diagnosed with a Rare Disease? So this topic really resonated with me personally on so many levels. And Therefore, in our last presentation, the focus was on novel diagnostic techniques used to help one patient related to our special guest speaker that we had, Dr. Tim McDaniel, who was then diagnosed with a rare skin cancer. So he is from the Translational Genomics Research Institute, TGen, which is located in Phoenix, Arizona. And TGen is a nonprofit medical research institute dedicated to speeding the application of precision medicine in the clinic. So for most of his career, Tim worked as a scientist, and so he was able to use that knowledge and, you know, and bring this all together when his mother had a rare cancer, and he led a volunteer team to find a treatment for her disease through DNA sequencing.
Wow. It sounds like a lot of really technical information. Is it geared more for technical, or is it geared more for the patient?
It is really geared for the patient.
Okay.
It is really geared
for
the patient and the caretaker.
So you bring the technology down to a level where, like, a normal person like me can understand?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So he was basically sharing the story of his mother, and was diagnosed with rare cancer, and how he went about and getting the volunteer team together to find answers, to get the right people together to look at her disease. And he broke it down wonderfully, so for everyone to really clearly understand. And we always have a Q&A session for the last 15 minutes in the presentation.
Very good. Now, are these WebExes or webinars, are they recorded so we can go back and listen to the recorded information?
So at this current time, we don't have recordings, but it is something that we are looking at the future. However, we are going to repeat some of the webinars that were held. So we're looking at getting Tim McDaniel back, perhaps for another one, and then possibly also repeating our first presentation as well.
Now, was Tim McDaniel, that was in February. Did you have one before that?
Yes, we had our first one was in January, and that was focused on the most important things everyone affected by a rare disease should know about the drug development process itself for rare diseases.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, if you wanted to register for the webinar, you would email Dr. Speed at lspeed@sndtm.com and in the subject put RDPF exclamation, and that she'll send you the WebEx login information. And the next WebEx is webinar is on April. What is it? April.
It's April 23rd. Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. April 21st or 23rd?
23rd. April 23rd, and it takes place at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Okay, and it's titled "The Rare Diseases: Patients First, Patient at the Center of It All." That sounds good. Dr. Wyatt will be the guest speaker. So that'll be good.
Right.
And
Dr. White, he's the director, professional affairs and stakeholder engagement at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. So he's going to focus on the very important topic of patient engagement in the drug development process as a rapidly developing field. And it's particularly important in the area of rare diseases because the number of patients with rare diseases is very limited. So this requires drug developers to gather the most appropriate data during the clinical trial. And in order to do that, they must clearly understand of what is important to the patient with a rare disease that they're developing the new treatment for. So no one knows a rare disease better than a patient that is living with it. And he really wants to emphasize on how patients are experts in their disease, and that we need to include their input. And many of the patients want to be consulted about how their disease affects them on a day-to-day basis, so that this input may translate into better and new treatment. So that's a wonderful upcoming presentation. And when you look at it, his focus is really to provide rare disease patients were the focal point for advocacy and hence two-way communication, collaboration, and really assist them in navigating the FDA on issues concerning drug development, review, and drug safety. So it's a wonderful opportunity. I would really encourage everyone who has been diagnosed with a rare disease or is a caretaker of a patient with a rare disease to attend this webinar.
Now, I have a question, and I don't know if you know this. You might know this doing your clinical trial at NIH, but in some cases, the patients may not be able to communicate everything across the board. Are they utilizing caregivers and family members for information, for intake of information on these clinical trials?
Oh, are you referring to exchanging information about their rare disease or putting patients in contact with each other?
Well, for example, when you're in a clinical trial situation and especially for a rare disease, and maybe the patient has difficulty communicating, do they also work with the caregivers to be able to communicate the information that they need for the clinical trial? Or does the patient have to be completely standalone, able to communicate?
So I can just speak from my personal experience here. So when I go to my clinical trial, there is usually a social worker that shows up. And when I fill out the forms to get admitted to the hospital, there's a question whether I need support, whether someone needs to help with filling out information or supporting me or should be in the conversation with the physician. So I can speak for the trial I am in that they take great care of that someone will work with a caretaker and the patient together.
Good. That's good to know. Because I know it's a difficult process, especially when you're already dealing with, a condition that's causing you distress, And
yes,
to have a caregiver or somebody to come along with to help you through the process is always a good thing. And now, have you found aspects that are similar across all rare diseases that you've come across? I mean, like you had mentioned, we kind of all go through the same process of denial and then anger and then, sadness or whatever. But are there other similar aspects
in
rare diseases?
One of the aspects I found at first that I think many of us are, it takes years and years to get the proper diagnosis. And I think, it's a combination of, you have a rare disease and caretakers may, or doctors, physicians, they may or may not know about your particular disease. So while both sides poke around in the dark for years until they can put the puzzle pieces together. So that's one thing, the diagnostic side is very challenging, I believe. And then on the other side, when you look at it, so there's approximately 7,000 rare diseases that impact almost like 350 million people around the world. However, the number of treatments for rare diseases is very limited. So we're talking about 200 to 400 reported treatments for all these diseases. So what we also have in common is that there's very limited number of treatments, very limited number of clinical trials going on, and also the monetary support for these trials tends to be smaller, on the smaller side.
Right. Now, you've got one treatment for Lyme right now, and you're hoping by participating in clinical trials that, hopefully at one point there will be another option or several other options for you besides lung transplant.
Right.
I have a question for you. Did you notice something was wrong before, or did it just bam hit you?
No, I knew that something was wrong a while before I got diagnosed. So, I started having, as I said, when I started to increase my athletic activities, I started having more and more respiratory problems. But whenever I went to the physician to see someone about that, I looked very healthy. I was in really great shape. I ate healthy. I had a healthy lifestyle. It was always believed that I had bronchitis, I had pneumonia, I had asthma. So their support was try this inhaler, try this pill, rest some more, drink more water, and nothing would help. I started getting really bad chest pain. And so the first time I went to an urgent care was like chest pain-like symptoms. That was also years before, and the diagnosis, I had an inflammation. I think the lining around the ribs or so was inflamed. And another time I went, they said I was really short of breath, and I had chest pains too, and they said I might have an anxiety attack. So I started really believing that it's all in my head, that I'm a hypochondriac or something that I didn't know. I couldn't piece it together. Yeah. I put it aside and I just ignored it. And whenever I went on a ride with my husband, I remember I always had these pulling pains in my back, and I thought it was side aches or something. I told him about it, and then they went away, and then they came back. And now I know these were all small lung collapses. So, I had no idea. And I was racing with that. I was racing with a 40% lung collapse. And I know now, it was extremely painful. I had loose fingernails. I came back to the hotel that it was at the National Championships, actually. And I was racing in altitude, which most likely escalated that entire situation. Mm. I mean, there was moments I was really not thinking clear, and it was odd. So
it was a very difficult situation. Yeah, did your activities antagonize the condition more? I mean, did it?
I wouldn't say so. The thing is here, if you already have a lung collapse and you continue to exercise, I would say it would aggravate it more. However, otherwise, I'm still very active now. So there's no correlation between being active, exercising, and getting a lung collapse. And I can say that surely because I got a lung collapse sitting in a chair. I got a lung collapse driving in my car to work. I got a lung collapse when I woke up in the morning. I got a lung collapse while riding my bike. So there's all these different, activities or non-activities, and it didn't really make a difference.
That's probably a common problem with rare diseases, right? You've already got this predisposition, and so it kind of doesn't matter what you do. Eventually, it catches up with you, right? Well, what is the philosophy of rare diseases, patients first? What is that philosophy that you would like to tell our listeners?
So the philosophy of rare diseases, patients first, is really is our utmost goal to provide educational content to patients around the world. So to form collaborations with the major patient foundations and organizations to facilitate the global reach and provide this unbiased information to the patients and to the caretaker of rare diseases patients to give them information to, what you said earlier, to empower them with information, so that they can make better decisions and what they should do and how they should proceed when they come across a clinical trial, for instance, to educate them. So how drugs are developed for rare diseases and explain some typical basic designs for rare diseases, the clinical trials, what are the type of safety information that is collected during a trial, how they can contribute in the trial process, and, how the informed consent process works and what it involves. And very important, how to identify conflict of interest as you interact with the clinical trial process. And that's very important. And then some considerations for clinical trials that involve children specifically, and a list of questions that you can go to ask your clinical trial investigator at the different stages of the clinical trial process. The questions that you should ask.
Very good. What is your best source for looking up clinical trials?
So clinical trials itself, like the ones that you may be interested in participating in or for your rare disease?
Yes, yes.
So, first what I personally did for mine, I went to the Rare Disease Organization that, you know, to the Lam Foundation in my case, that looks out for patients with rare, with a Lam disease, right? So they had a wealth of information about ongoing clinical trials. So I think one good way is to go there and really go to that rare disease organization that talks about your disease and educate yourself. And sometimes you find links to other websites there. And then the second place I went to was the National Institute of Health. So that's another place I look to because they have a wealth of information on all the different clinical trials that are underway. And then you find also when you do a search, sometimes local hospitals have clinical trials going on. But these are the first two sources that I use personally, the Rare Disease Organization for my disease and then the National Institute of Health.
And also maybe your specialist might have knowledge of ongoing or current clinical trials for your disease category.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good. Good information. Okay, so April 23rd. Now, are you going to do a like a Facebook event to push that information out?
Yes, so I'm going to put information out on my site, and I know for the rare diseases patients first, they, you know, we will put the information out on the Facebook site that we have. We will send information out on Twitter, and I already saw there's a lot of information already posted about our next webinar, and we also have that information posted on LinkedIn as well.
And then your Facebook page is Rare Diseases Patients First on Facebook and Twitter as well?
Yeah, it's Rare Diseases and then PF.
Okay,
it's abbreviated, PF. The last two letters.
Oh, very good. All right, well, thank you so much. Did we forget anything that we wanted to cover?
I don't think
so. Do you remember anything? Yeah, I think we covered it all, and thank you so much for coming on the show and give our best to Dr. Speed, and we wish you all the luck with your outreach and your education. And don't forget, April 23rd, the title of the webinar is The Rare Diseases Patient at the Center of It All. That's a good title. And contact Dr. Speed at lspeed@sndtm.com. And she'll send you the WebEx login information. Patricia, stay with us here. I'll close off the show and we'll chat for a minute. And everyone, thank you for tuning in today. Thank you, Patricia, for your dedication to educating about clinical trials and development and the drug development process. And don't forget to tell all your families, your friends, your colleagues about Health for HD Radio. Visit us on our website, healthforhd.org, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and all that good stuff. And good night, everyone. Thank you so much. Have a good day.